All right, you're on the arms room with Glenn.
And John.
And Syria.
Wait, what?
Glenn, are you serious? On the show because they're getting their ass pounded right now.
All joking aside, things are getting pretty serious.
Serious. Oh, God, Mason.
Did you catch the first part of that? His all joking aside?
All joking aside, I didn't get that part.
I shamelessly stole that from the internet.
That was subtle, and I liked it. So, you don't realize that all these people are in an outrage about Trump blasting Syria?
Yeah, and if he hadn't blasted Syria, they'd be like, why didn't he do anything about the chemical weapons stuff?
No, even more than that is that our previous president actually has dropped way more ordnance on Syria so far than Trump has. But silence about that.
Because everyone just loves to hate Trump. Because it's hilarious.
I love these people who can't think, man.
And if he hadn't done anything, they'd be bitching about how we didn't do anything. So, whatever.
Whatever. Oh, man. What we got going on?
It's called job security, Glenn.
We've had some good training this last weekend. Man, taught a lot of classes. Lots of good training. Training Saturday, we had 19 students in a handgun class. It's great. Always great to see a nice big crowd out there. A handful of ladies. Always good to see that. Tons of fun. And tons of learning. But a really good time. We have close contact handgun coming up this next weekend. So if you're interested in that, make sure you get on that bandwagon. And we've got, what else? Intro to Dirt Medicine coming up tomorrow night. We got IFAC Lifesaver coming up next, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after that. Nonstop stuff. We have stuff, competition, intro to competition class. We'll be talking more about that with Russell on the next show. But we'll be talking about our competition class coming up. All kinds of great stuff coming up. Man. And the weather is so perfect to get out there and start shooting and training.
Yeah, the weather has been really nice this week.
Awesome. I love this time of the year because the weather is manageable. In about 2 months, I'll be like, I hate the freaking weather and I hate living in Phoenix. But then I'll just say that for a few months and I'll be off of it.
Yep.
For another 9 months. So if you follow the Independence Training Facebook page, you probably saw a great video we posted up, which actually got a lot of traffic, shockingly large amount of traffic.
This is the retard with the 22?
This is the retard who shot the other retard with...
Well, I don't know that the guy that got shot was retarded.
No. He's working security at a gun show.
All right.
When you rat, you rat.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. We had some really interesting comments and a lot of interesting fun on that video. It was like... 250,000 people or so who hit that video and left some really fun comments along the way. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, go to the Independence Training Facebook page. Look at the most recent video we posted. Just moron who literally violates every single safety rule, every single one, and then shoots another, granted, not a moron, just another guy who was working at the gun show, doing his own thing, mind his own business, being safe, just doing his job, and this idiot shoots a 22, bounces off the wall.
Shot the dude in the hand.
Hit the dude in the finger. And
well, when I first saw the video, I thought he was like pointing it at the guy's head.
It almost looks like it.
And I was like, oh.
Oh, this is going
to
get bad.
And then the dude's holding his hand, and I'm like, wait a minute. So I had to watch it like four times.
He basically was pointing it at his head. It's just he was more at the wall.
Yeah.
Now, elevation was head height. So then the best part is, of course, the guy puts the gun down, acts like, you know, nothing happened, calls on the radio, hey, help, being shots fired or whatever. And then no charges get filed against him.
That should at least be a reckless endangerment charge.
Dude, that should be a serious, serious issue.
At least an assault charge. Something. I don't know.
We need to take a guy like that's rights to own and utilize firearms need to be donezo. Because that's someone who doesn't care. They don't care. He violated every freaking rule.
Every one of them. All at one time.
No, guys, rules are suspended at gun shows. Everybody knows that.
Oh, right.
The firearm safety rules get suspended when you go there.
That's why I don't go to gun shows, because I don't like looking down freaking muzzles.
That's why I'm usually very happy of where my booth is when I do gun shows. It's generally not near people that are selling guns.
Unbelievable.
So I'm pretty stoked about that. But anytime I'm walking around the show to go talk to other friends or go see other people about business stuff, I look down so many muzzle barrels. It just makes me want to cry inside.
So there is a message I wanted to read about here real quick. We're waiting for. Oh, hey, there's our man right there. I want to read this message real quick because it was interesting. Hell, now I can't find it. Never mind. I was going to read a message, but I forgot about it. So there's some crazy stuff going on out there today, these days, out in the world. We have more terrorist attacks.
Mm-hmm.
We have all the crazy stuff with possible Syria issues and other countries. As usual, we have normal craziness with just people being nutso out there. So it's just important to remember, we got to keep our eyes open, we got to stay alert, and we got to practice what we're not good at.
And I'm good at everything.
Yeah. Here's the issue with how we see training happen so often is that people practice what they're good at.
Oh, yeah.
So they want to shoot some pistols, they go practice pistol shooting. They want to go practice, you know, and they just practice standing still or moving or whatever it is that they know they're good at. That's what they practice. But they won't practice the stuff that they're not good at. They won't practice the stuff that they don't know a lot about. They don't want to step outside their comfort zone.
Nope.
So with all the crazy stuff going on in the world today, step outside your comfort zone and do what you're not good at.
You're not my real dad. You can't tell me how to live my life.
When you go to the gym, don't just work on, you know, whatever your strength is. Work on what you're not strong at. Hit that squat rack.
Ugh.
Right? Do whatever it is that you're not good at. Quit doing the stuff that you're good at all the time. It's good to have a maintenance level at that, but not a I'm doing this all the time. Right? Do stuff that you're not good at. It's important. On that note, we just launched a big line of medical kits with the Well-Armed Woman.
Mm-hmm.
We posted up some information on our Facebook page about that. And of course, they have it all over their website. So please go check out those kits. Some really cool kits. And they're not just for women. They're medical kits. They just happen to be, you know, branded with that, with their little logo. But other than that, they're good kits. So the Well-Armed Woman medical kits, check them out. If something you're interested in, you can order them straight from them. There's all kinds of cool sales and stuff they have going on with that. So that's a lot of fun. We like working with that organization. If you're a lady and you're not involved with them, you really need to get involved with the Well-Armed Woman. They're like the only national organization that's really, you know, specific to women that I actually approve of. Most of them are just social clubs, Well-Armed Women's.
Wow, they've got the Glenn stamp of approval, huh?
They do.
Perfect.
They do. We've been working with them for a long time.
I still haven't gotten that.
Yeah.
And I've known the guy for years.
Maybe one day, bud. Maybe one day.
I wouldn't count on it.
Remember the coupon code that's still active for Gargoyles, TRAIN25, 25% off of Gargoyles eyewear. You just go on their website and use it. Make sure you follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Cool glasses, love them. You need to check that out. Yeah. All right, today's topic, since our guest just showed up here.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Oh, hey. How you doing? What's up, Ted?
Pretty good.
So, you know, Ted, we've done shows, I don't know, what have you been at this, guys? Over 3 years now. All right.
Yes.
And there has never been a show that we have ever received as much feedback and request for a guest to return as your previous show.
It's good news.
Yeah.
Did something right.
People absolutely loved the information about communications, getting involved, the equipment. We got nonstop emails and Facebook messages, and people loved it, and I know they're very excited that you're back. So today we're going to be talking more about emergency communications and some more stuff about HAM, but more just kind of emergency communications in general, right?
Exactly.
All right, so fire away, man. What do you got?
Well, first thing, basically what got me to finally take the last plunge to get my license is I had a trip. My girlfriend and I, we were moving her from Chicago out here. And we got stuck in a snowstorm coming back across the country.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Tucumcari, New Mexico, which is about as far east New Mexico as you can get on I-40. We got snowed in, stuck there, 170 miles of straight ice on I-40. There were no hotels there. Gas stations were running out of food. Hotels were full. There was literally like, we were stuck. Nowhere to go. Cell phones were overloaded to the point where we couldn't even call to let people know, hey, we're stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
And could have been something that with a linked repeater system in New Mexico, that would have absolutely would have been able to at least get information just to see if things are, what the traffic's like further up ahead of the road, where the openings were, just pretty much anything. So that was the main event for me that was like, okay, we're stuck. There's nothing I can do. That was a big deal.
And then there was another story you had mentioned to me in your email. We were kind of discussing these concepts about something that happened with a gal who's in your family, right?
Sure. So 2015, if you're an Arizona person, you might remember this. A cable got cut in the desert, and little did we know that a lot of the northern Arizona communication is all tied to one or two sets of cables that just runs across, I believe it was I-17, and somebody, they don't know if it was a malicious thing or not, but the cable ended up getting cut. Most of the internet and phone for the northern part of the state went out for the better part of a day. We had a family member who was female alone. She was coming back from a long trip, and she was going to stay at our cabin. And when that happened, we had no idea how to get a hold of her other than just getting in the truck and driving up there. 2 hours driving in the dark is not necessarily the safest thing. That could have been something real simple to have a radio set up in the house with simple instructions, say, hey, turn this on. You know, here's what to say into the radio. And then we would have been able to get a hold of her. So,
and that was a cable.
A cable.
Mm-hmm.
I remember
most
that.
Of the state.
Yeah.
So credit cards, yeah. Phones, mm-hmm. Internet, everything went down for the state that day.
Yeah. So, I remember because I was at the time living in northern Arizona. And
that was a big problem.
Everyone went black. I mean, total black. Yeah. No comms.
So these repeaters they're able to communicate from hilltop to hilltop. They don't need that cable infrastructure. So that's a real stupid problem to have as far as a cable being cut and taking the internet and phones out. But that would have been a quick solution to, hey, the phones aren't working. Go turn the radio on. Here's a little pre-designated card of what to say next to the radio for her, because she's not a radio person, but she would have got the message out. We would have known she was fine, and it would have been no big deal.
And there was another situation that you had talked about the last time you were on the show, about a race that you were kind of involved in. You weren't necessarily involved in the race, but you were kind of involved as part of the event staff, right?
Not so much event staff, just monitoring the event staff, I guess, okay. Showing up to see what was going on without mentioning the actual race.
Sure.
Basically, the runners it was a ultra long distance race in, we'll say, Scottsdale. And they had EMTs and search and rescue personnel out trying to help people that went down on the trail, which it was quite a long trail. For I think it was like 100 plus miles was the trail, and the EMT guys knew what they were doing, but they had really degraded communications with their radios. They were talking back to volunteers on the radio who weren't necessarily good at handling emergency communication. One of the big things was the GPS coordinates. For whatever reason, they could not read a complete set of GPS coordinates over the radio, and that was really hurting. That was really hurting the people. Yeah. It ended up being about an hour's worth of time before some of these people got help. And it was warm enough to be out, too warm to be doing an ultra marathon race, but they were out there doing that. And they also didn't have any pre-designated sites for helicopters that were pre-planned with GPS, you know, ready to hand out. And the communication handling, they hadn't practiced it enough. That was evident on the volunteer side. The search and rescue guys were huffing and puffing in the radio trying to help people. And they shouldn't have to be worrying about passing information back, whether or not it's being received or not. So that's just an observation that a little bit of planning on their side would have gone a long way to helping people.
So you've got three different stories here that you're personally involved in, and all three of them kind of have different different things that we're looking at here, right? In your first story, you have comm capability, mm-hmm. but everything's overloaded and there's no secondary source.
Exactly.
Right. In your second story, the cables are cut. There is no comms capability. So in the first one, there's comms. It's just overloaded. So they're available, but difficult to utilize. Mm-hmm. In number two, there is no comms. They do not exist, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's that sucks. Mm-hmm. And number three, in the third story, everybody has comms. They're all working, but there's no plan.
Exactly.
No one knows how the other person's talking or what they're saying or whatever. So really kind of what we're drawing from this is we want to be able to utilize good planning to, one, make sure we have comms equipment that's going to work no matter what, even in a snowstorm when everyone else is tying up your typical cell phone traffic. Two, we want to make sure we have something that's not reliant on infrastructure that might easily go down. And that was one thing that I found really particularly interesting from your last time with us, is that all the repeaters are on backup battery. So even if you totally cut, I mean, you literally have to blow one of these things up
so they recently,
to stop it.
Because of the weather, the recent weather issues, they had a bunch of repeaters. They lost power, the main power up to it. Now there are a lot of commercial sites that are up there as well, as far as the amateur radio stations right next to them. But a lot of these systems were running on generators for about a week or two after, because it takes a while to get some of these amateur groups up to the mountaintops. It's not like AT&T where they're going to send a tech up in, you know, four-wheel drive convoys up to the top to get it working. So they were running on degraded backup power for about 2 weeks, and they finally got up and were able to fix some of them. So that's, granted, that's just a snowstorm, but that's still, they have that capability there, and it's that public safety mindset of why those repeaters are up there on that hilltop anyway. It just makes a, you know, it works for us because we can count on it.
And then from a planning perspective, as far as your kind of last situation you talked about is, like you, like we were talking about when you first walked in, and that was the need for preparing, practicing, and training what we're not proficient at. And in this case, it's definitely going to be comms. And I think that's the thing that why most people were so interested in your show last time is most people never really thought about this. And it wasn't something that they had ever really put thought into other than, oh, I'll just get myself some little walkie-talkies and we'll use those. But we talked about the very real limitations of those things last time. So let's talk a little bit about the planning concept. How does this, how does someone even get started in planning for emergency comms?
So reverting back to the old Army acronym, PACE. And what that is it outlines a series of communications, like primary, alternate communication, and contingency and emergency. That's what the acronym stands for, PACE. So your primary communications, your alternate, your contingency, emergency, whatever that flow is, you want to start thinking about possible situations that, okay, if my cell phone doesn't work, what's the next thing? So a typical thing, like just to get a hold of regular people today, would be cell phone landline doesn't work, send them a text or an email or send them a Facebook message. If you can't get a hold of them that way, we'll go walk over and go drive to them. And the emergency communication would be possibly call 911 to go check on them if you can't reach them. So that's, if you think about things in that primary all the way through the emergency steps, that can help you plan what for different scenarios, sort of what you want to have available to you. And it also might dictate some of the routes or some of your whatever you're doing for that trip or that event or whatever's happening at that time.
So if you're going to pace for communications, right? I mean, pacing is kind of something that you say like, oh, it's the old Army acronym. Dude, I use it still today for a lot of things just because it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And it makes sense if I'm going to, even if I'm going to drive, yesterday is a perfect example. I was driving down someplace to teach a class and the I-17 was closed because of construction. So that's my primary, right, is the I-17. But it's easy to just go, ah, my alternate is 51. That's easy. Just hit the 101, hit the 51, I can still get to my location. If the 51's going to close, that's okay. I still have a contingency. My contingency takes the 101 all the way down to the 60 and I can then cut back, or the 202, and cut back across west. So it's like even when you're just traveling, people are already kind of pacing things in their heads when they go do stuff. They might just not have be putting like a term to it. So from a general plan perspective, pacing is effective. How do we pace with actual comms though?
So with comms, what you basically you want to get it set up when you're planning your thing. So we can still, we'll start with cell phones. Cell phones, everyone's tied to it. You're looking at one right now. I mean, that's just the standard everyone has. Alternate's always going to be, might not be that you can get a hold of them and talk to them 100%. That could be email, text, cell phones. Once again, when I was explaining the overloaded small town New Mexico cell service, phone calls couldn't go through, text messages, the phone will sit there and try to send the text message after a while and eventually will go through. So that's a good, that was our secondary. And contingency, if it's, you know, that will be sort of dictated by what the situation is, but you might need to go walk or go drive to communicate with however you want to. Same deal with emergency. It could be getting a hold of local EMS. It could be our emergency plan is we go into our family radio check-in schedule. We'll talk about planning that next. But just that breakdown from your primary to your emergency, it's real important to start thinking about that with your with what you're packing and what you're planning and sort of also who you're trying to talk to as well.
So I chime in for a second here talking about this because I did comms when I was in the Marine Corps, and we always had to have all of our frequencies, our primary. When we had a, we called it a guard chart, and it had everything listed out. Well, this is also about the time that I used to know everybody's phone number, mm-hmm. right? So if my cell phone at the time, cell phones weren't very popular, but if my phone goes down, I know two phone numbers. That's it. I know my number. No, I know three. I know my number, my wife's number, and my in-law's landline number. Those are the only three phone numbers I know. So, like, in my opinion, one of the first things you should probably add to this is a list of important phone numbers that you always carry with you. Because if the cell grid goes down, landlines may still be up and available. So it just kind of that first step is make sure you know some phone numbers and have a way to still access those numbers if you need to contact people.
So as far as the actually making a family plan, that was going to be kind of the PACE goes right into that, because you use PACE as far as setting your priorities of your modes of communication. Military or any sort of organization, it's called a signal operating instruction. And that's going to be pretty much a written, it doesn't need to be a formal written outline, but that could be a piece of paper saying, you know, you give to your family, or maybe it's an email or however you want to do it, that here's your dad's number, your mom's number, grandma's number, here's their addresses, here, these are the physical phone numbers you need. You also do that for radio frequencies, because in case you end up not using your radio or you need to help, all the frequencies that are relevant in the state and kind of what their capabilities are. Their location helps if you're not 100% familiar with it. Basically, just a written piece of paper. It could be something as simple as something you stick in someone's wallet or purse that has people's phone numbers, or places to meet if you can't get a hold of people, if it's safe. It could be meet at grandma's house. You know, if you can't get a hold of anyone, meet at anywhere. It's just thinking in the PACE plan of primary hasn't worked, alternate hasn't worked, contingency, and now emergency. Now what do we do? That goes into your emergency communications plan or your signal operations instructions. And that what that also does is I have a whole family member or a whole family worth of people that have no interest in getting a ham radio license. But in an emergency situation, I can leave something at the cabin next to the radio that says, hit this, turn this button on, hold the microphone down and say this, and it's going to, they'll know exactly what to say. And that was just as simple as leaving a sticky note, but that's an emergency communications plan as far as getting a hold of that. So that's an idea in somewhat of an emergency communications situation.
And when you're in that kind of emergency mode, I think an interesting thing that you've kind of mentioned that maybe other people haven't been exposed to is doing radio checks. I mean, from a military standpoint, we're used to doing radio checks, but I don't think everybody's used to that, right? So, and it would be radio checks on the hour, radio checks every quarter hour, radio checks every half hour, whatever that particular TTP was for wherever you were. But radio checks are an important thing to be able to do from an emergency perspective. I can't get a hold of anybody because we've had this, whatever, this terrorist attack, this natural disaster, whatever has happened, I can't get a hold of anybody. Mm-hmm. So I turn on my radio, I go to our family's frequency or our group's frequency, and on the hour, I wait for that radio check. And if I don't receive a radio check, then I send a radio check, right? And if I don't get a response, then I know that something's up, right?
And that's something you can outline and you can work out with either your family or whoever you're trying to get a hold of, that it's pretty common in the military world or even a lot of the any sort of – if you carry a radio at all, you do an hourly radio check. It's not a big deal. Part of that is if from an emergency situation, you may be working on a battery that has a limited amount of time. So you don't want to just turn the radio on and wait. So, you know, you could plan ahead of time that, hey, every hour on the hour for the first 5 minutes, that's when we're going to try to get a hold of each other on this specific frequency. It could also be, you know, every 3 hours, go 3, 6, 9 p.m. Those could be your times to do that, a 5 or a 10 minute window. But once you get introduced to thinking about planning like that, that sort of helps people kind of sort of opens up their mind as far as, oh, okay, I see where we're going with this, as far as giving that's the emergency communication plan that they could outline with their loved ones or with their group or whoever they're working with.
And we can keep it pretty simple.
Exactly. And that's the point, because like I was saying, I have a family that has no interest in doing anything with radios. But if they needed to get a hold of anyone, they know they could go upstairs at the cabin, flip a radio on, start talking. It's going to be set to whatever they need to. They don't need to do anything other than that. And that's part of our communications plan, is to try to keep it extremely simple with people. And that's also with the other directions too, which as far as like phone calls or email check-ins. I mean, we're talking about radio communication now, but it's sort of all this fits within the PACE plan as far as the emergency planning. So you take all of your cell phone, email, Facebook, all that into account, whatever you can get a hold of. That's going to be, you got to work that out with your family or with whoever you're trying to get in touch with.
Now, some other things that people might want to learn about, and I'm kind of looking at your outline of some amazing information here, but one of the things that you mentioned people need to know about is like the phonetic alphabet.
Exactly.
Right.
So it sounds stupid, but
which is hilarious sometimes whenever you're talking to someone on the phone.
Well, which phonetic alphabet?
Yeah, and they try to
Alpha,
Charlie, I love when people come up with their own phonetic alphabet. Yeah. Yeah, you're like, what the hell?
So as far as on the amateur radio side, the NATO phonetic alphabet in English is pretty much, it's going to be the standard. So even when you're talking to people internationally, that's still it. You might not be able to pick apart their accent when they're coming from South America, but it's still phonetic in English, the NATO alphabet. So get a piece of paper that has that on there and start practicing it. And a lot of the old ham guys will say, hey, best way to practice is while you're driving, read people's license plates. Just as you're driving, just something to keep the time. But if you don't use it, you'll forget it. And it's not necessarily something that you need to burn into your mind. But if you have a pre-written plan or notes that go along with your radio, that's something maybe if you're not real up on your phonetic alphabet, that takes two lines of, you know, two or three paragraphs worth of text just to show you exactly what you need to do. But it's one of those things, practice it. And if it's an emergency situation, you know, Albuquerque, Buffalo, you know, whatever you got to do, if they can understand it, then that's the whole point. But the point is to keep things somewhat to a standard, because everything will flow easier, especially if you end up in a really rough spot and you're just barely getting through. People are used to hearing that NATO phonetic alphabet. They're going to be able to pick that out a lot easier than they would with whatever crazy words you're coming up with. So,
and the same goes for how you pass GPS and location information.
Exactly. Well. So pretty much, however, the first responders and the EMS guys, they're going to do their thing. But if you're going to be passing that information, practice it. And with a lot of GPS units, they typically will not give you any sort of decimal reading that's easy to read back. You're going to get something that's going to have degrees and minutes and seconds. And if you haven't looked at that and you haven't thought about how you're trying to read that back, good luck doing that the first time when you're cold and bleeding and, you know, or whatever's happening right there. So my suggestion, just a quick thing, take a look at your GPS units or your phones, and you can adjust how the readings are for your GPS coordinates. You can get them in a decimal format rather than the minutes and seconds. It's a lot easier to read over the radio. If you can basically get that information to them, anyone that's used to looking at GPS coordinates is going to be able to figure out real quick what the formatting is, so it's not going to be that big of a deal. The other thing that's important when you're sending information back and you need to confirm it, once again, if you've done anything on the radio, let someone know on the radio, hey, prepare to copy. I've got a GPS coordinate, a GPS grid that's coming. Read it to them, have them read it back, and you just have to go forward because you don't want to drop a digit or miss a digit, and now they're looking for you 50 miles away or, you know, you've just made your situation worse.
And that's a really important thing, because I've had people try to read me GPS information before, and you're like, dude, what in the hell format are you reading right now? You know,
well,
like,
mine are all of my GPSs are set up for the like, MGRS.
The UTM or MGRS. Yeah. And that makes sense. The thing is, I don't know, and there will probably be some search and rescue guys that come in and say, yeah, no problem. Like, just get us a grid. We'll be fine. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have no exposure to UTM or MGRS. So, right.
Well, I think, depending on, I don't know that much about, I've only used a handful of them, but on my Garmins, mm-hmm. I can put in one, mm-hmm. and it will take me wherever, like it, regardless of what that format is.
Yeah. Some devices are like that.
It'll convert back and forth pretty easily, but that's something... If you have not a lot of cell phone life, do you really want to be screwing with converting or same with your GPS unit? You might need that GPS unit in 2 hours from now when the helicopter says we can't land where you're at. You need to go to this coordinate. Mm-hmm. So have it set up. Decimal format's the easiest way. Every little organization is going to have their own standards of how to do it, but you need to look at your GPS unit that is maybe going to save your life one day and say, okay, how am I going to say this over the radio? And pretty much anyone that's on the receiving end of that is going to be able to pick out what it is. But I don't want to give out standard formats or anything on this one because it'll be different for every organization. But at least look at it first to have an idea of what you're getting yourself into if you do have to read it off the radio and confirm it with whoever you're talking to. That's a big thing.
And that also goes to the phonetic alphabet. There's a very specific way to pronounce numbers for radio communication.
We would always make fun of Fife.
Fower and Fife and Tree.
We'd be sitting on the radio thinking, oh God, we got a new guy with his trees and fifes and everything.
Yeah. Fife. Tree. Oh God.
You can always tell who the FNGs are.
If comms are crap, sometimes that
makes a difference.
It can make all the difference in the world.
Or you can just say 1, 2, 3, as in three. That's
Three, as in three, the number three.
So I'm looking at the GPS status, which is the program that I use on my Droid.
That's what I use too.
It's a great program. And I'm looking at all the different formats. You've got the decimal. You've got decimal with minutes and seconds, UTM, MGRS, CH1903. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, some of those are digital formats.
Standard grid and Maidenhead.
Mm-hmm. So some of those are digital formats. The decimal
Maidenhead?
Format.
Maidenhead.
Stay with us.
Okay, excited.
Stay focused.
Maidenhead sounds nautical.
Yeah, it does. I agree.
So an example of a grid would be, so prepare to copy my grid. So we north 33 degrees, 47.923. How copy? Mm. That was real fast. So that's your northing. And then the next one they'll read back, say, okay, you're north. North 33 degrees, 40, blah, blah, blah. Then you read them your the other element. So you'll say west 112 degrees, 16.973. Kind of that flow of, that was pretty quick, but that flow of things, that's a real easy way to do it. Rather than saying north 33 degrees, 47 minutes, 377 seconds, it's the flow just ends up being better. But once again, there's no standard format, but look at it and just be prepared to verbalize it on the radio.
I like the decimal system because I can type it into something else like Google Maps, mm-hmm. and it's easy to type in decimal system to that. I don't need any special characters or anything. Mm-hmm. So you punch it in, hit it, zoop, take you right to where you need to go.
And the hope is whoever's on the receiving end of the radio is going to be near something that it doesn't matter what format you give it to them. You can give it to them in UTM or whatever, mm-hmm. but GPS is the easiest that anyone could punch into their little handheld GPS, which we're trying to make this easy and streamlined. But if you throw out a MGRS grid at someone, there might be a throw out a Papa uniform and an 8-digit grid. Whoever's on the receiving end might not know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So let's get into some of the gear. We talked about equipment last time, but we never really put it together as a list. And you've got a great list here. So let's talk about that. This is kind of a things to consider / packing list as far as the hardware is concerned. What are we looking at?
So first thing, your radio. Doesn't necessarily need to be a rugged radio, but whatever you store it in needs to be somewhat of a weather-resistant container. Ziploc bags will work. You don't have to go buy a Pelican case for it, just something that's going to keep the water out. Coming from the military side again, too, you always have backup antennas, at least one additional antenna. So typically when you're out bumping around in the woods, you could just have the stock rubber duck antenna, which is probably about 3 or 4 inches long. I would also suggest having a an additional longer antenna, and they're called whip antennas. If you're going to be out pretty far away from civilization, a backup or a backpacking roll-up antenna, which we can put pictures on later as an example for that. But that, basically what that is that gives you an option to string it up in a tree, get it probably about 20 feet up, and still use your same little handheld radio, but you're going to be able to transmit your signal a lot clearer and a lot further. So that's a good option.
And the Baofeng radio is still the way to go.
To start off with, yeah. Yes. That's good. We're still going to, I want to push that one because there are a million other ways you can go after that. But as far as your first intro to these radios, it should be that Baofeng inexpensive radio to start with. The next option is you still have to power it. So there are a bunch of battery options. There's the factory battery, which actually is surprisingly well. I don't have an hour rating on it because if you're transmitting on it, the battery gets eaten up pretty quick. But if you're monitoring, it lasts quite a while. There are extended life batteries that are a little larger. As far as looking into other options, there's AA, AAA battery packs. There's car chargers. You can plug them into a cigarette lighter, or you can run them directly off of a 12-volt battery. There's also, as far as charging options, you have a like the USB battery packs, like the jump starter little things. Everyone should have one of those by now anyway. Yeah. That'll keep your cell phone or your radio, or it'll jump your car if you need it. So those are all important things to have when you're out and about. But you just have to think like, okay, how am I going to power this? I might need to take my batteries out of my GPS and plug them into my phone, or I plug them into my radio in order to get a signal out. Or maybe I might need to do the opposite and plug them in to get GPS to find out where the truck is. Looking at power from that standpoint, I mean, I'm sure that's a whole other, you could go into a whole other episode on power management, but start thinking about things like that when you're carrying things that you can use, you have multiple different uses. Next thing, so we got the radio. So you basically want to keep the radio dry and powered is the main thing.
Now, on that note real quick, some interesting things that I've used that I want to mention because I've had good success with them. Are the and I don't know if it's the right way to pronounce it or not. I think it's Anker, or it's not spelled like normal Anker. It could be Anker. I don't know, but it's Anker. It could be Anker, I guess. But I use their battery packs, and they work phenomenally. A fully charged one, which is about the size of a small notebook, I can get 3 full charges out of my cell phone off of that. And so for something like this, the same, I would imagine, if not more. Mm-hmm. So I like those. I like the in my truck, the jump starter pack that I have in there is actually one of the Napa brand automotive starters. It's phenomenal. It can boost USB. It's got built-in lights. It's got a built-in strobe. It's got a DC hookup, and it all again, the size of a small notebook. Mm-hmm. I've also had a lot of good success with the Goal Zero products. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like their solar panels because they're very cost-effective, and they get the job done.
Yeah, I used one of those as well, and that it's surprising how much of a charge you can get even if the sun's not completely shining mm-hmm. throughout the day. So the Goal Zero ones are definitely pretty slick, especially the fold-up backpacking ones.
That's the one I use the most. Yeah. And I can throw it on a pack, run the wire into the pack, charge up whatever. And sometimes I'm not even charging the item. I'm charging up a battery pack. Mm-hmm. So that when I get to camp, I've got the battery pack fully charged or as charged as it can be throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And then I can charge whatever I need to off of that. So that way if I need the unit, like you're walking with your radio or you're walking with your phone or your GPS or whatever like that, you need that as a comms device or a navigational device. Now I can charge it when I get back to camp. So mm-hmm. those are all those 3 things I just mentioned, $300 at the most for all 3 of them.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you poke around and find good deals on them. So you're not talking about something that's cost prohibitive, each one on its own figure about $100, but you're not talking about something that's cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm.
And to go along with that, I know Goal Zero for a long time had their own brand of the rechargeable AAs.
Yes.
Well, now Energizer and a couple of other companies are starting to make the solar rechargeable AAs and AAA batteries mm-hmm. too, which I just recently saw. And I was like, oh, that's neat. Because it's been my experience that rechargeable batteries don't generally last very long. And they die because they build that build the memory.
Yeah.
And then they just go to crap. So,
But so radio, so we've got the, you've obviously got your radio and your power covered. The next thing is you want to have, getting back to the printed hard copies of things, mm-hmm. you want to have a little piece of paper that has the frequencies that are nearby that you could possibly need. You want to have, if you're planning a trip, there's a website, we'll put a link up to it, that you can basically from A to B plan all repeaters from A to B in a nice printed list for you. So you can automatically pull them into whatever software that you're using to program your radio, or you can have a printout of here I am on the map. This is the closest repeater to me. So if you end up on a long road trip, you know, you'll know exactly by looking at a piece of paper where you need to connect. And that's a pretty slick site. As far as whatever radio you're choosing from, it doesn't need to be Baofeng, but we'll just say for the Baofeng radio, you also want to have some cheat sheets as far as programming your radio. So if you need to enter in a different frequency, if it's been 6 months since you've looked at the radio, you're probably not going to remember. A lot of these menus, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to just look at and figure out. But just quick notes on how to add a frequency, maybe how to change repeaters, how to just do real basic stuff. Because once again, you might not be the one making the call on the radio either. So it's a lot easier to talk someone through it if you have instructions that are written out rather than going off of your memory trying to make sure. But the written phone numbers and addresses, that's any sort of pertinent emergency type frequencies. So the local weather frequencies are typically not that hard to find on your radio, but you never know what's going to happen or who's going to end up being the one talking into the radio. So it's good to keep that hard written or that hard piece of paper with the radio. And it doesn't need to be any bigger than a note card that has your information on it.
You know, that's an important thing to keep in mind, because I always think about like my kids, you know, they're, you know, smart enough to read something and follow directions, but they probably aren't going to spend a lot of time talking on my radio. But if I'm the one who's hurt or out, you know, hunting or something, I get incapacitated for whatever reason, and they've got to make a call, they need to know how to turn it on, how to use it, how to change frequencies, what are the important frequencies, mm-hmm. maybe a note on there about how to charge it up, where the extra batteries are, stuff like that.
Exactly.
That way, someone else who might be using your radio knows. Or, you know, you're out romping around the woods and you wreck your truck and someone comes upon you and nobody has any service, but they find your radio and there's some instructions attached to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could literally save your life.
Exactly.
Now, there was some other stuff you talked about in the last show that I want to mention again, because we got a lot of questions about it. The first one was, is it called auto patch?
Yes, auto patch. So do you use info about it, or what was the question?
People wanted to know, because auto patch was your ability to use your radio to make phone calls.
Correct. So Pretty much what you need is, there are repeaters that, speaking from Phoenix, because that's what I'm familiar with, there are at least 5 or 6 different repeaters that will give you the capability of making local, like 480-602-623 phone calls for up to 3 minutes, but if you're able to reach that repeater with your radio. So all that is you, a lot of, and this is the way, same way across the country, but you hit the key up, say your call sign, you hit the star button, type the phone number. And then it'll say auto patch engage, and then the phone will start ringing. And you talk into the phone, you talk to someone just as you're talking to someone on the radio. Just say, hey, you're on the radio. Don't say anything stupid, but come pick me up. And, you know, that's pretty much all you need. Come pick me up at this grid or this mile marker, or come pick me up at the rest area.
Now, is there a place where I could go to find information if I'm traveling across the country, for example, mm-hmm. To know when I'm going to be within range of any of these auto patch repeaters?
Yes, there are a bunch of websites, and we could, I think probably if we put links on maybe the follow-up
we
stuff.
We will, but maybe just mention.
Yeah, so Repeater Book is a pretty slick and free, it's a website, and it's also an app. I don't have any Apple stuff, but from Android, it's a free app you can download. It goes by proximity of where you're at, or you could also look up online just from a couple of the other links that we can post up.
So if you have your location enabled on your Droid, it'll just tell you.
It'll pull it up immediately.
Here's where you are, and here's your nearest repeaters. Yeah, exactly. And will it list on there, here's the repeaters, and this one's auto patch capable?
Exactly.
That's freaking awesome.
So that's pretty slick. But once again, if you have cell service, why aren't you using your phone?
Sure.
Have a written copy of what's going on. One of the things I showed you the last time is just a map.
Yeah.
Map I'm holding up of the of the state that lets you know which repeaters have auto patch, which repeaters have some of the other voice over IP capability, and you just you'd start to memorize it after a while. But if you're traveling someplace you don't know, like New Mexico in the winter, it's good to have. It's good to have plans to know where they have auto patch and
which. And now, where did you print those maps off from?
So these, you can find them typically on local repeater groups or like state. There are radio groups that each state or city will have one, and they're typically the ones that will maintain the repeaters in the state. So all of them have websites. So ours in the state is the ARA, Arizona Repeater Radio Association. Go on Google, type in your local radio group for whatever city you're in. You'll probably find five or six different listings, and they're going to have maps that'll have that capability. But they're also the websites that we can share will have that as well.
So another really interesting note, and on before I get into this, we're going to be posting all these links and a lot of this information up on the Arms Room Facebook page. And if you don't have Facebook, if you're listening to the show and you're like, oh, crap, I'm not a Facebook user, don't worry about it. Just shoot us an email, info@trainingaz.com. We're happy to email it over to you. If you don't use Facebook and you don't use email, it's 2017. Get with the frickin' program.
Talk to me on the radio. But I don't want to be on a list.
Yeah. You catch me on the radio every weeknight. So I'll answer your questions for you.
There you go. Pen and paper and note-taking material. That's an important part of being on the radio.
So when I read that grid off about 10 minutes ago, you're not going to remember that.
No, I don't.
There's no reason for it. Yep. And so when you have an emergency situation, you might need to, or you're going to need to be writing down dispatch info. You're going to need to possibly write down, CASEVAC or medevac sites that you're going to need to take people to. It's also when you are about to make that call, it's good to have everything written down because you can look at it. And if you have to retransmit information multiple times, you might not remember what the guy's name is by the fifth time the scratchy radio transmission's going through. So if you have everything written down, then that, you know, that you'll be able to just glance down on it and go through. So once again, going back to the military, nine-line medevac call is a pretty standard thing, and everyone hit his head shot up there. But the first five lines of it are basically what you need. You can look it up online without taking up too much time, but the first five lines will get responders headed in your direction with pretty much all the information that they need, with how many people are there, how urgent it is, how many people are able to move, or if people are completely disabled, what's the deal? So take a look at that, the first five lines. You don't have to send a nine-line medevac if you're stuck on 87, but that's a good idea and a good reminder as far as the minimum information, and write it down because you're going to be stressed. You might have to go away from whatever the site of the car accident or the fire or whatever in order to make that phone call or that radio call. So you might not be standing with the information right there, or you may not be the one, once again, making that radio call. You might have to go hand it off to someone and say, go up on that hill, read this card to them, and then come back when you're done. Those are all options. So pen and paper, it's pretty simple.
And with my own personal experience on just radios in general, I really like to have the right in the rain pads, because if it's an emergency, probably raining.
Right. Yeah. Right. Underwater.
Yeah. I wish right in the rain had been around when I was in the Marine Corps doing radio comms. Yeah, because all we had were the green logbooks, right?
And a poncho liner.
And a poncho liner, dude.
In a North Carolina summer that curls up like this.
Jesus Christ, don't crutches, man.
Yeah. So have something like right in the rain, which I really like. And also write down possibles. Like sometimes if I'm receiving radio comms and I'm not sure what they said, I'll write down what I think they said, right? And then I'll have, send again your last and have them send that back, and then if it's coming through scratchy, then write down what you think they said again. And especially if you have bad comms, like, you can usually figure out what they're trying to get across.
Phonetic alphabet.
Phonetic alphabet's also really good. But yeah, it's like it's makes one it of those a lot things easier. Where having pen and paper, or sometimes if you're receiving radio comms and you're like, oh crap, I got to ask for this or I got to send this, you know, next, write that down because you don't want to forget that in an emergency. So, you know, I get in the habit of when I'm involved in important communications, even when I'm like on a business call now, I write down kind of the highlights of what everybody's saying so that I can remember and make sure I go back and hit all the topics that I'm supposed to be hitting. And so that just that important in an emergency. If I, okay, cool, I just got radio comms with this person. I climbed to the top of the hill to do it. And I go back down and I'm like, shit.
My notebook's in my truck.
I forgot to, well, no, it's like if I didn't write it down, it's like, oh, what did he say? Did he say go this way or did he say go that way? And it's like, crap, now I got to, in the rain, hike up to the top of the freaking hill again to get the comms back so I can find out exactly, where they want me to go. So
simple solution. It helps save time and it could help save you at some point. So,
yeah.
And it's grown man law. You should have a pen and a way to write things down with you at all times. I'm sorry.
Now, there's some other products that you had put on this kind of outline you'd sent to me, and there was a monitoring device.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me more about that.
So this is a device that's pretty slick, and this, once again, is a whole other show worth of content, but you guys should check it out. It's called an RTL-SDR dongle. RTL-SDR dongle. And what it is, it looks like a little USB thumb drive, and it's attached to an antenna. And what it does is it lets you listen to radio signals on a pretty wide frequency, or a pretty wide array of frequencies on your computer. And it's all free software. This dongle is about $24 on Amazon. You're able to listen to ham radio traffic. You're able to listen to local EMS and PD traffic. And in some cases, if the PD, which the local departments, most of them are using digital systems now, you're able to decode that digital traffic and listen to them so that you'll be listening to like squad car to squad car type traffic versus just listening to general dispatcher type traffic, which is typically what they let people listen to easily. So RTL, SDR, dongle, find them on Amazon, find them on eBay. It's pretty slick way. It's another way to monitor radio traffic that's around you. Some cool things that, once again, it's sort of an eye-opening thing. Aircraft are tracked using just regular radio signals. Mm-hmm. So everything's basically radio signals, but there's software that, with these little antennas, you can track any sort of aircraft in your area just by the signal that they're kicking off. So it gives them their direction, their altitude, their speed. So once you start playing around with some of these things, you start realizing how much information is floating all over all the time. And this just kind of gives you a little toy that you can monitor. Once again, local ham frequencies, the EMS stuff, pretty much anything that kicks off a radio signal, you'll be able to listen to it if it's not encrypted.
Right. Now, again, I'm going to be putting up links up on our Facebook page. There's going to be studying and test info. There's going to be just some general links on some of the stuff we've talked about today. Links to various equipment. All kinds of equipment on here. Holy cow, all kinds of stuff. And then some Arizona-specific links as well. For those of you who are in Arizona, if you're not in Arizona, you're just going to have to use the power of Google and find your own stuff. But there's a lot of information
here. Google.
And I will also put up a link to that RTL-SDR thing.
Perfect. So. And that's there's a lot of – we'll put some links up. There are a lot of projects that people are doing with them. But $25, plug it in your computer, 10 minutes of screwing with it. You'll be able to listen to your local ham stations as well. Won't be able to transmit, but you'll be able to monitor. So that gives you some options of seeing what's going on. And $24 for that is a lot cheaper than a $200, $300, $400 scanner.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're pricing things out, if you need a weekend project, this would be a fun, cheap thing to do to be able to monitor that.
So what are some other concepts that people need to be considering here now that we're kind of getting people into this idea of radio? Is there any other stuff you want to kind of cover tonight?
Licensing. Today, that was kind of a question when on Facebook. we covered it a little bit last show, but pretty much my suggestion is get a radio and start listening. You'll be able to play around with the radio settings a little bit. You're not going to be transmitting, but you'll be able to listen to some of the local traffic and get an idea. The next thing is find a testing site. You'll be able to go to arrl.org, which we'll put a link up for that, and you'll be able to search by zip code for your local testing sites, and there'll be some probably 6 to 8 months planned out of when you can go. So when you have a date set to take your test, now you have to study. So as far as studying, all the questions and the answers are all available online. They're not hiding any questions or answers from you. For the tech test, which is the tech exam, which is what people are going to need to take first, it's 35 questions long. You need 26 right. The question bank is about 400 questions, not a big deal. As far as studying for it, we'll put some links up. But for Android, there's an app called Ham Test Prep that you can, if you get 5 minutes, you can just burn through the test material on your phone and work up on that. HamExam.org also has a bunch of different study links that you can get ready
ham
for.
Ham exam.
Yeah. Sorry,
ham
that exam. One.
Make sure you don't hit hamexam.com. Yeah, that's a different website,
late.
Bud.
Yeah, that's going to get awkward. That's going to get awkward.
Hamexam.com over there.
But so one of the sample questions of your 400 possible ones is, what is meant by term PTT? And there's A through D. And
text to talk?
Push to talk.
Push to talk.
The answer is D. The push to talk function, which switches between receive and transmit. Yeah. That's one of the questions you're working with.
Whew. Bro, so they're all that combo? Easy. I'm
good.
They're not. Some of them aren't. Some of them get a little trickier, but
old combo, bro.
Yeah, you had to crank it to talk to people when you were in, right?
Tie that little message around that little bird's leg.
John was a carrier pigeon host. Yeah.
John meant 1812 Marines back in the day.
But, smoke signals. We'll put a bunch of links up to testing material, and it's free. I do better with flashcards. So there are companies that sell pre-made flashcards for you. It's like 10, 15 bucks. Mm. There are a bunch of different ways to do it, but 12-year-olds are doing this. So if you put the time in.
So if you fail, you're stupid.
Yeah.
That's what Ted just said.
You should be embarrassed. Yeah.
You should be embarrassed. For all those people who failed their first
choke
ham
yourself.
Test.
Yeah.
So is the ham test is something I take online?
No. You go in local, right?
Yeah, Glenn, because they knew you were going to take that little app he was just talking about and use it to pass the test.
So typically the local radio clubs will run it. I took mine through Red Cross. Red Cross hosts them as well.
Interesting. So they probably do it once a month, once every couple months.
Yeah, it's different clubs will do it. You'll be able to find one probably every couple of weeks.
Okay.
And a lot of the clubs will do training classes as well. So they'll do like a 4 week, like one night a week workup for it. If you look at the flashcards and material for 2 weeks, you'll be able to pass it. It's not a big deal. And then there are other levels there's a general and extra class, which gives you access to do more stuff. But focusing on the immediate sort of regional communications, like what we're trying to do now with emergency handling, your tech license is going to be able to do everything that we just talked about for this show and the previous show. So it's a good place to start. I think it was like 10 or 20. It's like 10 bucks for the license. It was $15 in cash to show up and take the test. So it's not a big investment.
It's not cost prohibitive.
No.
No. All right. Last thing I want to talk about, we just have a few more minutes, is this whole concept we have of actually putting a course together. You know, Ted had talked to me after the last show about, hey, maybe if people think this is kind of interesting, we should put, a training program together, since that's what we do is training. And with as much interest as we got, I contacted Ted and said, hey, maybe we should maybe put something together. So he put a course concept together and sent me an awesome, awesome outline.
That looks super in-depth.
Very non-complicated, but very in-depth about, now that you've heard it, how to physically put all this stuff together, how to take the radios, how to attach the antennas, how to use the different antennas efficiently, how to make calls. Hmm. You don't have to have your license to attend this program either, right? Because we can basically use whoever's got a license there. We can use theirs to make test calls and things like that and talk to each other. So there's a lot of really great information in this course. So here's what I want from our listeners. If this is something you would actually attend, then I want you to shoot us an email, info@trainingaz.com. It'd be probably about a 6-hour class, I think. And we do it, on a weekend or whatever. And it'd be very, very hands-on. You can't do this not hands-on. So there'd be tons of hands-on information here. I'm just reading through it again. It's It's freaking awesome. So this is the kind of thing you'd be interested in, and learning how to use different repeaters, and we'd spread out and create some distance so that people could learn how to really talk to each other. And shoot us an email and let us know it's the kind of thing you'd be interested in having Ted come out and teach, because obviously this is something that's well within his realm of teaching people how to do, and training is not something that's new to Ted either. So let us know, all right, so that we can put something together. Anything else, Ted, that you want to tell people before we wrap it up?
No, I would say if you're kind of on the fence, pick up a radio, start to look to see when the next testing sessions are, and just start studying. Because as soon as you agree to want to go and take the exam, then you'll find time to study. And because you don't want to embarrass yourself and fail the 35-question exam, because we'll keep track of that. But
we'll know.
No, it's easy. You just have to do it. And really, it's sort of like taking your driver's permit test. You don't know what the hell's going on until you've had the license and you know what's going on. You're not going to throw a 16-year-old in for a cross-country drive. You need to have the experience of playing with it.
Challenge accepted.
And you're not going to be able to use the radio efficiently if you haven't been licensed for a while and you don't have the time of actually communicating with it. So that's the most important thing.
And that would be a big benefit of being able to go through this this course we're talking about anyway, which is kind of all about emergency radio communication, is it'll give you lots of hands-on time so that when, just like shooting, right? Mm-hmm. You buy a gun, you're not all of a sudden a shooter. You may understand how it loads and fires, but you don't know what you don't know until you actually go out and start using the thing. So that would be a great benefit for anyone who wants to get involved in this. Ted, thanks for coming in again.
Yep, no problem. Appreciate
awesome.
It.
As always, tons of great information. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you anytime.
You should.
Because
we're awesome.
We get hosted all over the country, and we like traveling. It's fun. So email us info@trainingaz.com. And, I've had some inquiries lately where people think hosting is hard.
It's not. We're actually really easy.
We are not as difficult. I have hosted, as Independence Training, we host a lot of organizations.
Some people are very difficult.
Some of them are incredibly easy, and some people are a pain in the ass. Some companies are such a pain in the ass that I want to host them, but I don't have the time to jump through all these ridiculous hoops they have.
Yep.
We don't. We just need a place to train, and then as long as you help us secure that, then you train for free. It's that easy.
Yeah, it's not complicated.
Super simple. So
if you have enough people and the correct facility, we'll make it work.
info@trainingaz.com. Email us and we'll send you that. Make sure if you're a social media user, you follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Red Wire Gear, and of course, Independence Training. And we're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to check out their other shows that they have.
Wait, there's other shows on the network?
Not as good as ours.
Oh, okay. Like, I keep hearing about these other shows, but I've never heard them. Should probably spend some time and listen to them.
Adam always says that there's a tie between the top two shows on the network, and it's ours and his.
He's lying.
I'm pretty sure he's making that up.
So that being said,
we love you, Adam.
Remember the Gargoyles coupon code is TRAIN25. And if you really want a set of Gargoyles eyewear, let me know. Shoot us an email. We're not giving out free eyewear, but I've got a slightly better deal than the 25% off thing. If you email me, I will send
with you. Conditions.
With conditions. Mason.Miller@gmail.com.
No, so God.
Send nudes, regardless of gender.
Or species.
Or species. He's up for anything. So make sure to email us if you want some more information about that. On next week's show, which is going to be a pre-recorded show.
We're going to be talking to you from the past.
We're going to be talking in the future from the past, as we've done in the past.
In the present.
But now it's in the future. So we're going to be in the present talking in the past from the future. Right?
Yes.
All right.
Mind blown.
Boom. Mind grenade. So we've done these kind of shows before. We have to pre-record because we're going to be tied up. We're usually tied up with training, like we will be next week or next week in 2 weeks.
Stop. Stop.
So next week, we're going to have a pre-recorded show with Russell from KE Arms talking about the Superstition Mountain Mystery 3-gun match and also our intro to competition class we have coming up. And again, why competition is something that you really ought to consider getting involved in if you haven't yet. We've got some good information about that. And how to get involved and kind of what are the steps, what are the equipment and things like that. So until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.